So, you know, I've got this shirt from ZJZDesigns.com. It's one of their Thanksgiving prints, and I wore it to family dinner last year. I got more compliments on that thing than any of the food that we brought. Seriously, their stuff is clever, it's comfy, and it's always a conversation starter. Whether you're into spooky Halloween teas, patriotic vibes, or you just want something original that doesn't look like it came from a big box store, check them out. ZJZ Designs. They've got new prints all the time, and I guarantee you, you'll find one that fits your vibe. Check out ZJZDesigns.com. Get ready, Columbia. Soda City Comic Con 2025 is turning up the heat this summer. It all goes down August 23rd and 24th at the Columbia Metropolitan Convention Center, and the guest lineup is already packed with fan favorites. Let's start with Katie Sackhoff.
Yeah.
Starbuck from Battlestar Galactica and Bo-Katan Kreese from The Mandalorian and Clone Wars. She's a sci-fi icon and one of the coolest people to ever wield a blaster. Then there's John Heder. The man, the myth, the Napoleon Dynamite. From Blades of Glory to Surf's Up and everything awkwardly hilarious in between, he's bringing the signature charm to Soda City. And rounding it out, we've got Caitlin Robrock, the incredible voice of Minnie Mouse in Mickey Mouse Funhouse, Minnie's Bowtie Tunes, and many more. She's also voiced characters in Agrisuco, Amphibia, and Mr. Pickles, a true animation powerhouse. They'll all be there, signing autographs, taking selfies, and meeting fans all weekend long. And this is just the beginning. Even more celebrity guests are being announced. So keep checking SodaCityComicCon.com. For the latest updates, guest lists, ticket info, and VIP perks. Make your summer unforgettable. Grab those tickets and come celebrate all things pop culture at Soda City Comic Con.
Hello, 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 all you cool cats and kittens. Welcome back to episode 8 of Politically Speaking. Thanks for sticking with us so far, whether this is your first time or your 8th episode with us. We're happy to have you with us. Tonight, we got all three of us here. You got me, Emily Mayer. You got Fantastic E, or whatever she wants to call herself today. I think I called her E-Money earlier. And we got our fantastic Kirsten Pruitt in the upstate with us tonight. As Erica always says, I'm just trying to be like Erica right now. But Erica always says, we got a lot to cover tonight. A lot to cover. So let's get to it. Erica, go ahead, kick us off.
Yes, and we really do have a lot. We actually had to skim this one down. So we had too much on the plate. So let's go ahead and get started. We are going to be diving in to talk about some hot topics. Some of you may already know about it, but if you don't, that's the point of this podcast. We want to share some information, keep you in the loop, keep you in the know. Make sure you spread the information, because knowledge is power. Let's talk about the foolery going on in Texas. That is, every time I turn on my TV, it is the topic of the conversation. I'm assuming you guys also know about it, right?
Yeah. No. I know. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay. Good. 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 Okay. So from my understanding, what is happening is that Governor Abbott, he is calling for a vote, but is dealing with redistricting and how it, and I'm trying to make sure I summarize it correctly. So he's calling for a vote to talk about the whole redistricting. How do you say that word?
Redistricting.
Thank you. Thank you. Yes. I was trying to over here sound it out, Erica. Okay. So he's talking about that. But the gist of it is, from my understanding, this isn't even supposed to be a conversation in the state of Texas. I don't know about all the states, but in the state of Texas alone, they're only supposed to do it every 10 years.
That's a general. That's pretty standard.
Okay, perfect. That's why we all on this podcast. Okay, you know, but it's supposed to happen every 10 years. And the issue, well, one of the issues, there is many, is that we have not reached that 10-year mark. They are trying to cut it in half and do what's convenient for them because they're trying to gain more seats and in these elected positions. And so it's caused so much stir and commotion to the point that they can't even get a quorum to even get the vote. And when I say they cannot get that, it's because the Democrats are taking flight, literally taking flight out of the state of Texas. And so that's what we want to open up with, because that is a heavy topic. What are your thoughts about what is going on in Texas?
Kirsten, go ahead. You start.
Well, to add to like what they're trying to do, if, you know, they're able to pass this redistricting plan, then in theory, it would give the Republicans 5 additional seats in the U.S. House of Representatives. Mm-hmm. So that's a pretty big deal. The Republicans have the majority right now. It's a slim majority, but they do already have that. And so they're just looking to expand that while they are in power. And I think they're afraid, too, because mm-hmm. in the midterms, they're going to have to answer for everything they've been doing up to that point. So if they can draw districts where you know you're going to have Republican voters that really don't care what you've been doing, it gives them an unfair advantage. And yeah, I don't know. Em, what do you want to add?
Yeah, you hit one of my points right away. It's definitely a fear of the midterms. There is a general consensus out there that Republicans will have a really tough time in this midterm. At least that is the hope of the Democratic Party. And in line with what we saw in the first Trump administration. So I think you're exactly right. Like, it's a slim majority that they have right now. If they can get 5 seats that they know they don't have to worry about. And Texas has been trending. Like, I mean, they've been running some strong congressional candidates. They've been, you know, at the state house level picking up seats. So, like, Texas is trending in a direction that is not Greg Abbott. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, there's definitely like the fear of the midterms, but also the fear of the trend of Texas right now that I think impacts it. I want to give a shout out to J.B. Pritzker, Governor Pritzker in Illinois. His family, all of his fortune and wealth is based on his family's owning of hotels. And so he welcomed those Texas Democrats with open arms and said, we will put you up in these hotels. We will keep you safe because we know in this political climate, there are threats and there are, you know, all of these efforts to it's just crazy. But so shout out to Governor Pritzker. He has even said, like, Greg Abbott can try to send the cops here. And the cops are more than welcome to visit the great state of Illinois, but they will not be taking anybody out of the great state of Illinois. Mm-hmm. And I love that energy. I think right now in this moment, that's the energy that Democrats need. That's the energy that voters want to see. So shout out to him for sure. And then, you know, I've been going back and forth on this because I don't believe gerrymandering is right, regardless of which party is in power. I don't want Democrats to draw seats that are in favor of them, and I don't want Republicans to draw seats that are in favor of them, because the people, I truly believe in the ideal of America that the people are electing who represents them, not the other way around. And call me an idealist, pie in the sky. No, I know that that's right not...
I'm right there with you, girl.
So I've been having a really tough time with this because I would love for there to just be like independent redistricting commissions that come in and draw all the lines and everything is as fair as can be. And the winner wins and the loser loses. And we'd all just like move on and try again in 2 years. But that's not the reality of the world that we're in right now. And the Republicans are not going to play fairly. It's not like, I'm not even saying there's a chance they play fairly. It's like very, very clear that they have no interest in playing fairly. Mm-hmm. And so, unfortunately, what that means is that the Democrats now have to also play unfairly. So Gavin Newsom, we talked about in the last episode, governor of California, and Kathy Hochul, the governor of New York, have both said, like, if Texas wants to do this, go right ahead. And we will find a way to get those 5 seats back. I think even Gavin Newsom was like, I could have them redraw a map where every single district in California is Democratic. So I'm, again, here for that energy. I hate that that's the point that we're at. Mm-hmm. But play stupid games, win stupid prizes, I guess. Like, we're not going to be able to shift the tide if people are playing on 2 different playing fields here. So they're going to get down and nasty. We got to get down and nasty. And if that means we have to draw lines that I typically wouldn't agree with, then that's what that means. I also just don't understand it's 2025. First of all, like, why are we redrawing lines? Mm-hmm. And not only that, we redrew lines late because of COVID. Mm-hmm. Like, the courts said, because people weren't able to go door to door to finish the census in 2020 and all of this stuff. So it's not even like it's been 5 years, like, it's been three. So I'm just like, whatever. But I wanted to ask y'all, did you see that one of the congressmen in South Carolina is like, oh, well, we need to de-gerrymander Clyburn out of his seat. We should redraw our maps. We have one Democrat in Congress representing this state.
Right.
And whoever, I don't remember if it was Ralph Norman. I don't remember who it was. Mm-hmm. But they were like, we need to redraw our lines too and get Clyburn.
And they probably will.
Mm-hmm. I think it's just the audacity of the whole, like, scenario. It's like, why even set up the parameters that this should happen every 10 years if we're doing it now? Like, why even, like, it's already the law, you know what I'm saying? Like, this is what they're doing. So who just woke up one day and said, today is Tuesday. Like, you know what? I have nothing else to do today. Like, let's redraw some lines. You know, it's like, no.
They keep moving the end zone.
Right.
Like, they're just like, it's ridiculous.
And then the extra layer is, you know, Governor Gabbett is like, trying to remove these, you know, our elected officials from their seats because they chose to not be present for quorum and stuff. And I just feel like that's also another layer of, like, these elected officials do not work for you, Gabbett. What's his name? Gabbett. Yes, they don't work for you, nor do they work for President Trump. They work for the
people. I love this Gabbett. You're mashing together his name.
What is his name?
Greg Abbott.
Listen, yes, thank you. Listen, you know, I was like, what is his name?
Say that again.
What do you mean? What do you mean he ordered it?
Oh, it was Trump.
Oh, I forgot that.
Oh, I didn't know that part.
Ew.
Okay. Thank you.
Well, listen, Donald Trump and his cronies.
Right.
Correct. He's like, if people are talking about Texas, they're not talking about me wandering on the roof of the White House.
Deflection.
And they're not talking about the Epstein files again, still. Mm-hmm,
deflecting.
So, you know, this is like all part of his, it's all part of his game. I think the thing that pisses me off the most about Greg Abbott sending out Texas police and I think even like federal agents are being mobilized.
Yeah, they're trying to get the FBI involved.
Yeah. I'm like, first of all, Texas law does not, like, there's no legal standing, number one. Like, these folks are within their right to leave the state, to use every tool at their discretion to fight. I mean, as somebody who looks at legislative strategy on a regular basis, this is one of the tools when you're in the minority that you have in your box that you can use. Mm-hmm. And so, one, good for them. But two, this is the same party that recessed Congress because they didn't want to take a vote on releasing the Epstein files. So they all just went home and had a long summer vacation.
Lock it. Right.
But there's no conversation about repercussions for them for not doing their job.
Mm-hmm.
But we're going to go send out federal agents to go to Illinois and try to bring these state house representatives who probably make like $400 a day come back and take this vote. Like, I the double standard drives me insane.
Yeah, and I just feel like Governor Abbott needs to go take a seat. Nope, no pun intended.
I think I read that they get $600 a month. Like, I feel very confident that I read that today. So you're like $400 a day. I'm like, I think it was $600 a month because they were saying that, like, eventually these people are going to have to come back to Texas because, like, you can't survive off of $600 a month.
They're going to have to go back to work.
Right. Mm-hmm. So, and a lot of them have kids and they may want to be back for the first day of school. So eventually they are going to have to come back. But the other thing that is crazy with this whole thing is
Texas did this in 2003. They pulled a similar maneuver, and that was when Texas became a Republican stronghold after that point, because they drew the maps in such a way that that happened. So this is not new to their playbook.
I
keep making it more so.
I heard that he was having conversations of potentially replacing those that left and did not meet the quorum. And I don't know how that's possible. Mm-hmm. How do you replace?
It's not legal.
Right. That's what I was saying. But he's saying the language. And I feel like that's what confuses people, because he's like, I can he has intentions of replacing everyone that left. I'm like, does he have that type of power? Like, what type of democracy is this that if you don't get the vote, that you could just replace someone within 24 hours? Like, that's just crazy to me.
They wouldn't be able to do that in South Carolina, if that makes you feel any better. That is not within the governor's jurisdiction. They would have to vote as a body to remove each other, which is the conversation is with RJ May, right? So if that makes you feel any better, the last point that I want to make that I have on this topic is Texas just suffered those floods.
Right.
Those children died.
Right.
People are still waiting on FEMA funds that they're not going to get.
Uh-huh.
And this is what the governor is spending his time prioritizing. Like, if I were a resident of Texas, specifically in one of these affected areas that were flooded, I would be calling for a recall of ABD. I would be doing anything that I possibly could to be this is not leadership. Leadership is taking care of your people. And there are people literally still missing from these floods. Mm-hmm. So don't worry about the Democrats going to Illinois. Mm-hmm. Worry about taking care of your people.
Exactly. Abbott is just a puppet and the mouthpiece and stuff like that. It's whatever Trump says, I feel like he doesn't even bother to question it. He just does it. And that's part of the problem. I don't even know how he even got in this position, because I feel like he's been in this position for a while. This is maybe his second maybe term or something. I don't know how long he's been the governor. But I feel like he's been there for a while. And I just feel there are so many Black people and minority people in Texas. I'm just in awe that he is represententing them. They have voted him. And I don't know. Is Texas a red state? I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
It is? Okay. So then maybe that is my question.
After they redistricted.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Because every time I just feel like it's the melting pot. I just can't picture it just being the red state, but clearly it is.
Well, you know, they're still the state that elected Jasmine Crockett, who's killing it over in Congress.
Yeah, that's
so
true.
You know, where they have Dems, they got some fighters.
Uh-huh.
And they just drew, they drew
but
it however they drew.
The Latino population did vote overwhelmingly for Trump in Texas in this last and that, the Republicans, the way they want to redraw the maps, political strategists have said that it might not necessarily even turn out that it would be 5 Republican seats, because who knows if those Latinos are going to show up if Trump's not on the ballot. I mean, they might still show up, but who knows if they're going to vote Republican or if they just voted Republican for Trump. We don't know.
Mm-hmm. Who knows if they're going to be allowed to show up to vote.
That's a very good point.
Yes, I can't wait for this to be. I'm glad that this is Trump's last term, because I am so curious to see what happens when Trump is out of the picture, because it is.
Love that how confidently you said that.
Because it's the party of Trump. It is the party of Trump.
I don't carry that same confidence in me.
I don't
either. That you do.
Mm-hmm. I do not.
Really? I do. Well, clearly I do. But I do. I am curious to see when they take away that mouthpiece, who is going to be next? Is everybody going to start thinking for themselves and really figure out what is going to benefit their household? Okay. Well, we shall see what happens. But
I guess I'm a pessimist. I don't know. I just do not have
You're like, I got to see it to believe it. Listen, I feel you. I feel
We've been disappointed so many times. And, you know, once you've been knocked down, it's only been 6 months, you know?
But let's talk, since we are talking about campaigns and politics and all of that jazz, let's talk about all you new candidates that are on the ballot, running and gearing up. Let's talk about outreach and just the topic of fundraising, the perception of fundraising. How do you ask for money? What are the different ways to not pressure people into, you know, getting any type of funds? So let's go ahead and talk about that. And if you are running for office, shout out to you. That is not an easy feat. Shout out to Ev. She has definitely experienced that side of things. But let's talk about the perception of fundraising to anybody that is out there considering running, that is maybe already running or has experience with running. Let's go ahead and dive into that. So the first thing I want to ask, and I'm going to shoot this to Kirsten, how can candidates approach fundraising without making potential supporters feel pressured or uncomfortable? What do you think, Kirsten?
So I feel like, you know, politics is personal, and I think fundraising should be approached as much as possible from that lens. I know people always complain about all the fundraising emails you get, all the fundraising texts, all of these things that you're just inundated with. Like, you give to one candidate once and all of a sudden you're on this list. And I know that that does make money for candidates. I mean, not, I don't know how much, but it has to be making some money. Otherwise, they wouldn't keep doing it. So I'm not saying like eliminate that, but I think that call time, where you spend time actually reaching out to people, is way more effective. And but then there's also a balance, with that, because, you know, you reach out, you make the ask, and then what do you, where do you go from there? Like, do you keep asking? Do you let it go? You know, and I'm sure people have different opinions on it. Which is about making people feel uncomfortable. I think that, you know, if somebody's in a rough financial situation, or if they just don't want to give, for whatever the case may be, you know, you don't want to put them in a position where they feel uncomfortable, because then once they start feeling uncomfortable, maybe they're not going to make phone calls for you. Maybe they're going to knock doors because they're like, this is off. I don't know. So I don't know. I think it's a very nuanced thing. But I do think having those personal connections, at least to me, makes a difference. Because if somebody I know who's running reaches out to me directly and asks, 9 times out of 10, if I can do it, I'm doing it. Even if it's $10, you know, if you take that time. And then, you know, and again, this is another challenging thing, because I know in some of the trainings we've been in, you know, they've said to ask for a specific dollar amount. And that's something I struggle with, because I'm like, you know, you don't want to make somebody uncomfortable by being like, can you donate $500 to me? And I'm like, I'm just trying to put food on my table, okay? Like, I cannot do $500. And then, especially if you know the person, then it's even more uncomfortable to be like, I can't give $500. Like, I appreciate that you thought I could, but I can't. Like, and then I don't love having to tell people about my financial situation. Like, I don't want you to know how much I have or don't have. So, yeah, that was a very rambling answer. And I feel like, I'm sure Emily has a much more concise answer to this than...
It's not going to be concise, because I've sat on all three sides of the donation triangle. I have been the candidate asking for money. I have been the consultant making the candidate ask for money. And I have been the donor being asked for money. So I, like, I've come from this from all perspectives, and, you know, not to give away trade secrets here, but like, that's why it's important to have a team of people around you as the candidate, because they're doing that background research, right? Like, this person has donated consistently $100 to three or four different candidates in over the last cycle. So you know that asking them for $100 isn't going to make them drop their jaw, right? They're going to be like, that's doable. So that's number one from like the consultant standpoint. Then number two, as the consultant, I'm always the one doing the follow-up, right? Like, I'm going to send the email with the link, and then I'm going to watch if the donation has come in. If it hasn't come in a week, I'm going to bump it and say, if there's any other information you need, here's a donor prospectus about our race, these types of things. And if they still don't give, then I'm like, okay, that's like, I'm not going to keep having my candidate waste their time going back. Mm-hmm. But the first step in fundraising is you're supposed to ask every person that you've ever met personally to donate. Mm-hmm. And to your point, Kirsten, if people take the time to personally ask me, I'm going to give, because I understand the time commitment, but also I appreciate the effort. Like, don't just put me on an email list and say, donate here, I'm launching my campaign today, and expect that to be personal enough for me if you and I have had a meal together, phone conversations, you know, that type of thing. So from a donor perspective, I do like that personal touch. And there are some big dollar donors who have no problem giving even more, but only if you call them and like start a conversation with them, right? They could write you a $3,000 check if they wanted to on any day of the week. But if you're not taking that time and like, I hate to say earning it, but that is what it is for some of these big dollar donors. And we already know the Democratic Party doesn't have as deep pockets as the Republican Party. And so, you know, it's this give and take game of grassroots versus we do have these few big dollar donors. Definitely, I'm going to take the time to call these big dollar donors first. If you're a person who can only give 10, you know, can you give it three times, you know, like, can you set it up for once a quarter? And that way, you know, that donation's going to come in, or every month or whatever, what have you. But also you gotta just take people, like, money is an unnecessary, well, I guess a necessary evil in this game. And I really struggle with the fact that Democratic donors like take their ball and go home after a loss. They did it after Jamie Harrison. We saw a big fundraising struggle after his loss. I fear we're going to see it after this Kamala loss. Like, oh, well, they raised all this money and they still didn't win, so why would I give you my money? Mm-hmm. Let me tell you right now, if everybody has that attitude, Democrats are never getting any money and we're never winning again. Mm-hmm. You're doing it because you believe in the person, you appreciate them putting themselves out there, whether or not they win or lose, because campaigns cost money. Right. And I'm going to toot my own horn for a second and just say, like, when I ran for town council special election, I raised the most money for anyone ever running for a town council or mayor seat here in Bluffton.
That's right.
That's because people, thank you. They actually tried to use that against me as a negative.
Smack girl. That's right.
It's fine. But you know, that to me is a testament to people saying, I don't necessarily live in Bluffton, but I know who Emily is. I know she's a good person. I know she's doing this for the right reasons. I'm proud of her for stepping up. And so I'm going to give her whatever I can give her, $5, $20. When I tell you as a candidate, those little small dollar donations mean more than the bigger ones, because you know those are people who are trying to find a way to support you and wish that they could be doing more. Truly, truly, like, I mean that. And I've heard that from multiple candidates. When I was on the Lisa Ellis campaign, She always talked about how those $10 monthly donations from teachers meant more to her than anything else. And that's why you saw her be successful in fundraising, was not because she was taking special interest money, but because there were teachers across the entire state who found a way to give up $10 every paycheck because they believed in her. I think there's something so powerful in that. But those text messages, man, I gotta tell you, I opt out of them. I do. Yeah. They're impersonal. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I got one the other day for like a special election congressional candidate in like Indiana. And I was like, if I don't know that there's a special election happening for Congress in Indiana, like, you got bigger problems, my friend, because I'm super clued in and I had no idea. So I was like,
What gets me with those texts is they'll always have like a catchy like first line that like gets your. So when it comes up on my Apple Watch, I'm like, who the heck is this talking about, you know, babies? I'm like, what?
Or when they make you think that like it's Barack Obama asking you to donate.
Hey, right. Emily, like, it's Barack.
Yeah.
Hey, this is Kamala. I'm asking personally. No, you're not.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm gonna throw some shade. The boomers, I think it works on them.
I think it works on some people.
I think they really think that Barack Obama or Oprah Winfrey or whoever it was really sat down and wrote that email. And I'm like, no. They paid somebody a lot of money to write as if they were Barack Obama. But yeah, the whole money thing is tough. And I know like we're seeing it now, as people are announcing for governor or Congress or Senate or all of these things. And like, you know, those are big ticket seats, but we also have to think down ballot and where we're spending our money, and how, you know, Jamie is a great example of how the money that came into him trickled down and how that could benefit smaller race candidates who maybe don't have the money to hire a consultant to sit and do call time with them, right? So it's hard because you don't want to assume that people can give, and you don't want to assume that people can't give, but like expecting people to give the maximum amount unless they have a track record of being a person who gives the maximum amount feels a little, unless they're like your parent or your brother or whoever, feels a little out of the question.
Right. You're like, what the hell? Like, what is going on? I feel like both y'all touched on a lot of things as I was listening, but I feel like in order to make someone not uncomfortable, you need to make it personal. And the only way to make it personal is you have to have your face out there prior to the ask. Like you guys said, if someone pops up on your phone and you have no idea who they are, you're not going to be like willing to give your money up. You're going to be like, who is this? And if you're like us, you're going to be like, block. Nope. Thank you. I don't want to keep getting all these messages. But I definitely feel like.
And don't call me five times.
Right.
Don't call me five times.
Right. Once. And I definitely feel good. Like it needs. What'd you say, Carson?
That once is good.
Yeah, once is definitely good. And then my thing is, even once I do donate, I still get the text messages. And I know that's part of the like the pattern and the thread or whatever I done signed up for. I'm just like, no, I know I already gave you money. Leave me alone. Like, let me breathe. Let me think. You know, give me some space. God,
this is what you're spending my money on.
Right. Yeah. At least, yeah. Listen, take me on a date first. Okay, you know. My gosh, like, but I feel like that is the pressure when it's like you keep asking and stuff like that. For me, I feel like I support any candidate that gives me the option from starting from $5. I'm like, sold, yes, you got my coins. And then it just goes up with the, you know, the ladder, 5, 10, 15, 20. I'm like, okay, I got some options. But I even like the fact that they start from $5. That feels like, even though, you know, I have more than $5 to give, but the fact that they're coming down to, you know, everybody's level, whatever. Whatever you can.
Right. They're saying, exactly. I'm cool if whatever. You can only give me $5.
Right. If this is what you can give, listen, I feel like that is more what is personal, because it's like, again, you don't know what the person can give. But the fact that you're just starting from right here instead of like, you know, starting at the grand gesture, I need about 3,000.
$100,000 now in monthly payments. What are you talking, like, what in the world? But I definitely feel like
I think if you give me permission to donate $5, then I'm going to be like, okay, well, if I can do 15, I'll do 15.
Exactly.
You're but if you ask me for like $3,000, I'm going to be like, oh no, I'm not going to give you anything because I feel like you're not okay with anything but that $3,000.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, Kirsten, to your point when, you know, you're talking about, you know, how much to ask of people, you don't want to assume what people's financial situations are, especially if they're it's like somebody personal who, you know, doesn't have a donor history necessarily, you know, just laying it out there. Like, this is the most you could give if that's something that you're able to. If not, any amount is appreciated. And if you can't give financially right now, I'll need help with phone calls. I'll need help with door knocking. You know, please follow my social media campaign. And share things to help, you know, the algorithm or what, like giving people ways to support you that aren't financial, I think takes some of that burden and that pressure off of folks to be like, oh, I don't have that, but I want to help you because you're my friend.
Right.
And I think like laying that out from the jump for folks, like right now, like, I'll be honest, there are candidates out there right now who could be asking me for money, but aren't. And I almost appreciate that more. Like, they're just calling to talk and see how things are. And like, I'm like, if they asked me for money on that call, I would give it, but that's not what they're doing. And I'm almost like more impressed by that and appreciative of that than the ones who are like, Hey, you know, I'm running. I'm like, I do know you're running. Thanks.
Yeah, I think you got to definitely, absolutely, truly make a personal connection with the receiver. You know, whoever you are talking to, if it's a teacher, if it's a councilman, if it's your neighbor, the mailman, whoever it is, you got to learn to just read the room. Don't assume that, obviously, that they can, you know, give a lot or give nothing or whatever. Don't ever assume. Just make the ask. But I also feel like just read the room and then let it be, you know, up to the person. But if you're at some type of gala and things like that, okay, read that room and they know how to ask for those type of funds.
100%.
Through, but it's
100%
like a case by case.
There's also like this, I don't want to call it a game, but I guess it is kind of a game of like, you donated to me when I ran and now I'm going to donate to you when you ran. Like, it's almost like a passing around of the money.
Absolutely.
Which I think, you know, I appreciate, like, Russell Ott, great example. Russell Ott gave to me in my special. And then when he was running, I gave it right back to him because I was like, you believed in me. And, you know, you went beyond any support that I could have probably imagined. And so I want that. I want to reciprocate that for you. But it's just funny how it all like comes in cycles, depending on when you ran versus when somebody else you know ran and all of those things. It's kind of like a big cesspool of money from the same people that all just gets divvied up differently depending on who's running.
Well, let me ask you Let me ask you something. So you've already had experience with running. What ethical considerations should candidates keep in mind when asking for the donation?
I tried to be as concrete as possible about what their money was going to. I tried to say, you know, I need to buy yard signs and it's going to cost me $900 to buy yard signs. And everything that comes in today is going directly to yard signs. And then what I would do after the fact, and this is not possible on larger scale campaigns, and I completely understand that. I get that mine was a much smaller campaign. But I still think like for house races or county council, they're still totally doable, is I hand wrote personal thank you notes to each and every donor.
You sure did.
Because I wanted them, I wanted them to know how much that money meant to me. And that I wasn't taking it for granted and that I took the time while I was campaigning, while I was working, while I was being a mom to still say thank you. And actually I had a donor recently say to me, you are the only person that has ever sent me a thank you.
Again, personal, like, that personal touch.
I was like, what? I was like, you're somebody who probably gives to a significant amount of candidates. You're like a pretty well-established Dem person. And I was just like, I was shocked. was like, I feel like that is like, at least what I have felt is like 101 stuff. And I was like, I'm the first person that you ever got a thank you from. Like, I have a little stack in my corner over here from people that I've given from throughout the years. Bill Kimmler is one, you know, who stands out in my mind, making sure. And then now every year I get a holiday card from him because now I'm just on his list. But, yes, you know, there are some folks. Yeah, there are some folks who are really, really good about that. But that, to me, ethically, was really, really important. One, being honest and concrete in where people's money was going and not saying that I needed money if I didn't need it. Like, I feel like sometimes you get these messages that it's like, bad news, we're being out fundraised, like, 10 to 1. Like, well, one, no,
24
no, you're
hours,
really not.
$1,000.
Right. Like, correct.
24 hours.
The next 30 minutes.
Correct. And granted, granted, again, I was a much smaller scale campaign. And, you know, those tactics must work, to Kirsten's point from earlier. They must work because people keep doing them. But I'm not like, I was not one to lie about the money that I needed or where it was going. I ultimately had more money than I initially budgeted for, but it allowed me to do extra things. And so I kept saying, you know, our new goal is this, and this is why. You know, this is what we're going to do now with this additional money that we weren't going to be able to do before. And so that, you know, that felt good for me to be able to like be honest, but then also truly showing that appreciation, because there's like, I don't know how to explain it. And I wish somebody had said it to me before I ran, but the amount of added pressure you feel when people, you know, give you their hard earned money is a, like, you don't want to, like, you don't want to disappoint them. Aww. And so I felt like each, it was so rewarding. Like, thank you so much for believing in me, but also now I'm like, shoot, now I really got to make sure. That I'm like, so, you know, it's a weird mental space to be in. Also, like, you know, I could talk about the psychology of being a candidate all day long, because at a certain point, whether you actually believe you're going to win or lose, you're telling yourself you're going to win because you're telling everybody else that you're going to win. And so if you don't win, even if you knew you probably weren't going to, it's still really disappointing and sad, especially when you've given all of your energy. But yeah, ethically, that was something that was really important to me. And I also, you know, my final closing campaign event was a community-based event. It wasn't like a big fundraiser for me, because at that point it was like, I've done what I can do. You giving me money now, 24 hours before election day, doesn't mean anything. Not that it doesn't mean anything. It still would have, but I had what I needed to get across the finish line to do what I wanted to do. So I was like, anyone coming to this event today, bring supplies for me to donate to this organization. And I felt like that putting that communal aspect on it too was also a way to feel good about what I was doing, because a lot of times politics can feel really icky. And you want to keep it as true to you as possible. And that can be hard depending on what race you're running. But that was a really long answer to your question.
I want to tap in and say something that you had touched point about the personal touch. I will say I am a person who does not check my mailbox every day, because anything in that mailbox, I don't want. It can stay right there. So I will say that I completely forgot that I had even donated to your campaign, Em, because that's how long, out of sight, out of mind, I forgot all about it. And then one day I randomly checked my mailbox and I saw your note and I was like, oh my gosh, how cute is she? I was like so excited. It gave me the feels like Kirsten's Christmas cards, you know?
So, yes.
So I definitely appreciate it. I was like, oh my gosh, how cute is she? And if I felt like that, I can only imagine how other, you know, people that receive that, you know, feels like, because again, it was so out of sight, out of mind. And so when I did check the mailbox, I was like, oh my gosh, I was like, thank you, Em. I guess I didn't, you know, you don't think about like things like that, but it clearly filled my cup, because I received it, I opened it, I was like, oh, I love this. It was just, you know, the little things, like, you did not have to think. You could have sent it in a text, you could have like anything, but the fact that you
hand wrote it. You bought a stamp. You bought everything. You know, you mailed it off. I was like, oh my gosh, but she took time. And, she knows me. Like, she
and knows you put who I some am. Little, you put some little stickers in there,
right? Like,
Justin put his sticker. I mean, we both put the stick. Like, there were two stickers, and we both put them on our phones, even though we live nowhere near Bluffton. But we're like out here with our Emily Mayer phone cases.
Exactly.
And Justin kept his on his phone till it like literally disintegrated.
Oh, I mean, and this I was like that.
Months, yes. Way after the
no,
election.
Like people would like send me a picture of my thank you note when they got it. To like show their appreciation,
exactly.
Or like, hey, this is where I put my sticker, or like your thank you notes on my fridge, or like whatever. And I was just like, y'all's reaction to it made it well worth it. But it was also like something that I had to budget for, right? Like that was something that was important to me to be able to do for my donors. Mm-hmm. I had to include that in my big picture budget. Ultimately, I mean, it came down to like pennies compared to my yard signs and all that other stuff. But yeah, I mean, it is, that's why I think the larger campaigns, you're just not going to be able to keep up with it.
Yeah.
And financially, it doesn't make sense to spend all that money on stamps.
Uh-huh.
But when you have a smaller race or a special election or whatever it is, it's like a nice little personal touch. So shout out to the people who, taught me that that is the right thing to do. And shout out to the people who have given me thank you notes.
Mm-hmm.
And cheers to more thank you notes in the future.
So speaking of the future, let's go ahead and talk about the next thing that is up, that is coming up, which is the upcoming primaries. If your phone is being flooded like mine, I feel like every time I open up my phone, have y'all seen the Spider-Man meme where it's like five of them like pointing to one another? I feel like that's how it's like every time I open up my phone is someone else. And I'm like, who is this person? Like, you know, I'm like, I didn't even know this person existed, you know? But I think it's just, nonetheless, I think the competition is good, regardless of if they're coming, if I did not know about them or anything like that. I think that there should never be a seat that does not have an opponent. Like we just need more people involved, you know, more people who have something to say, something to give, something to teach. So I think that is great that, you know, once it is election time that you see more people on the ballot. Like, we need options. It can't just be the same consecutive person. I mean, and if it is the same consecutive person, maybe that person is just good, the right person, you know. But nonetheless, I'm glad that all these people, you know, do come out regardless. But yes, there is... the primaries are around the corner. It's almost time to get out. It's almost time to leave your house and vote, people. Is you ready? I feel like it goes by fast, though.
Oh my gosh, it so does. I got a phone call yesterday from the guy that I work with at the Greenville County Elections Office, and he's like, "You ready to go for November?" And I'm like, "Oh my god, I'm barely like I'm still in summer. Like this is coming up so fast, like,
right?"
I know. And this like Trump world where everyone just campaigns 24/7, 365.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's like the primaries are in June.
Mm-hmm.
It is August.
Mm-hmm.
They can't even file to run for office until March. So like, this is kind of crazy to have so many people announcing, and like the domino effect of like Nancy Mace announcing she's going to run for governor. So now we're going to have people announcing for the first congressional because we know that she's probably going to give up that seat. It's just like, the whole thing is like, it's like whiplash. I can't keep up.
Right. And that's also why I feel like the messages start flooding in. And I feel like that's the most annoying thing about like when it's election time, because it gets very overwhelming with the messaging and stuff like that. You're like, okay, I already know, especially if you already know who you're going to vote for, but then you got like five more messages that come in the same day and things like that. I feel like that's the part that gets like overwhelming to the voters, you know what I'm saying? Because we're like, okay, all right, I get it. You know, I'm here. But yes, the primaries are coming up. And I definitely saw that Nancy Mace finally, you know, ripped the bandaid off and made her announcement about her intentions for the governor's race. And Nancy Mace, I wanted to support her off the base of like, one, you know, she's South Carolina related. And two, she's a female. But if your own, but if not in your own party, if two parties are saying that, you know, that there's similar messaging about you. It's like, girl, you need to go back to that drawing board. You might need to get some friends or something like that.
Listen, if Nancy friends. Mace has 100 haters, I'm one of them. If she has one hater, it's me. If she has no haters, I'm dead. Because there is nothing you can get me to say that's nice about her. I feel the same way as you, Erica. In 2020, when she unseated Joe Cunningham, I was hopeful. I had high expectations. I was like, hey, there's a woman in this seat, right. You know.
Girl
maybe
power.
She'll be voting. Correct. I was like, maybe she'll be voting for expanded Medicaid. Maybe she'll be voting for more family leave. Like maybe she'll be doing these pro-women, pro-family things because of her experience as a single mother.
Right.
And then January 6th happened and she went on CNN and talked about how terrified she was and her kids were there. And I was like, you know, yes, like if my kids were in DC that day, I would also, you know, like it resonated. And then Rob just lost me. Like as quickly as she had me, she lost me.
Right.
And every time I see her stuff on social media, they always say don't read the comments. But if you want to ever be really entertained, read the comments on Nancy Mace's posts. Because Erica, you're right. Nobody likes her.
Right.
Nobody. Like, she's not conservative enough for the conservatives. She's not, like, she's some Republicans that just hate her because she's a woman. Mm-hmm. Like, there's so many different, like, levels to the hatred of her that I'm just like, every time she posts something, I'm like, let me get my popcorn and spend a few minutes because I don't get it. I don't get like the audacity like within her to be like, oh yeah, I'm the right person to run for governor, even though there's never anything positive commented on any of my social media.
Nothing.
I'm going home.
Are you guys both in the first congressional district?
Are you in 6 now, Erica, or are you in 1?
I'm in 1. I was in 6.
Oh, okay.
But I moved.
So we're both in 1. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I was just curious.
Yes. I think Nancy Mace, I just feel like, again, I keep saying like it's 2025. I just have so much expectations for the timeline that we're in that when she opens up her mouth, I'm just like, girl, like, I don't think you're loved. Like, your team must not like you because they keep allowing this message to like be out there. But and it's like she's just so ignorant. It's like I she doesn't have any empathy. Like she just doesn't care. Like she says, like, I don't even know what her thought process like is. And I say that only because we have to hold people that are running to these higher standards. So I just feel like the stuff that she comes out of her mouth, there's no way that you can say that and then be in the position that you're in. It's like, no, you need to be like a voter or something like that. Like, you can't be saying certain things because in 2025, people do the thoughts out loud. Like, they are no longer like thinking and not acting on it. In the rhetoric that you are allowing in the space that in the seat that you're in, it's just mind blowing. You can't act and say that because your intentions is they're gonna spread like wildfire. Someone is going to receive what you're saying. They're gonna feel froggy and they're gonna leap and they're gonna get the right one and they're gonna get smacked out. Like then, so it's like she's spreading this false narrative and these lies, and it's just crazy because again, you're a mom. Like, and then not only your mom, you're a person in a political position. You ran on certain like things that that are supposed to be better for your community. Like, you don't have just, I would say, trans in your community because, you know, she's like, she just something hitting home with her at that topic. But I just felt like she needs to represent all the people. And what she's doing is just trying to represent some people. And it's her people, however she thinks that it should be in her. And it's like, no, girl, you got everybody in your district. So stop trying to force this narrative and not have any type of empathy. She's rude. She's nasty. And like, and I feel like she could have gone, well, she has gone far. Someone voted for her. She's gotten to the seat. But I just felt like,
her storyline of being like the first woman graduate at the Citadel. Like she, you know, she's representing South Carolina. Like there's just so many accolades that she could have, you know, spread the message and let other young girls out there, you know, want to do better, want to, you know, have those aspirations and dreams. But I feel like every time she opens her mouth, she belittles someone and then she smiles about it. There's no, she's just rude and nasty. And again, you're in a position where you're speaking to your constituents and stuff. And the stuff that you're saying is just nasty and it's mean. And it's like, but now you want to be the governor? Girl, like what?
Yeah.
Like, I mean,
yeah, you're right. She has no empathy. And to your point about like, she only like serves a certain group of people. She only serves herself.
Exactly.
Like, yeah. I really can't identify a subgroup mm-hmm. of South Carolina District 1 mm-hmm. that is like, she represents me and how mm-hmm. I feel. Like, mm-hmm. I truly don't think that those people really exist. And it's like, you cannot try to be governor when you only care about yourself. Like, as much as I dislike some of the other people in this race, Alan Wilson, you're not going to find me saying a lot of nice things about him. You're not going to find me saying a lot of nice things about Pamela Evitt. Mm-mm. Certainly not saying anything nice about Josh Kimbrell. Sorry. But at least you know what they stand for and what they plan to do for the state, because they've already done it either as attorney general or as lieutenant governor or as a state senator. Like, I can't tell you what Nancy Mace has done, and she's represented me for 5 years in Congress.
And if anybody is considering running again, if Nancy Mace can be in this role and then run, I encourage you to put your name out there too. Because if she can be in this position, and then if she can run for governor, run for anything, I feel like if you're listening, by all means, put your name out there and you can run too. Because Nancy Mace needs to go have a seat along with Abbott. Like, both of them are just like, I thought, you know, and then sometimes I'm even getting like surprised about Marjorie Taylor Greene. Because she's actually saying things where I'm like, how in the world?
What world are we living in that things she says makes sense?
Right? It's just like, what in the world? But that's not here nor there. We are coming to an end. So we have not done two truths and a lie in a while, y'all. So let's go ahead and end it on a high note.
Kristen's going to beat me.
I was just going to say, it's going to be a high note for me. So
yeah, there's no purpose in even playing. Kirsten's going to beat me.
I don't know, though. Gerrymandering, I feel like you know more about that than me. So I think you might have an advantage here.
We'll see.
I'm giving the Birdman hand rub. Okay. So this is, we have been talking about the hot topic of gerrymandering. So I'm going to talk about two truths and a lie surrounding that topic. I'm going to ask three questions, and then they're going to have to decide which one of the questions is the truth. So the first question is, gerrymandering was named after Elbridge Gerry, who redrew congressional districts. Congressional districts in favor of his own party in 1812. So gerrymandering, again, stems from the person named Elbridge Gerry. Okay. The second question, the term packing, that refers to concentrating opposing voters in a single district to minimize their influence. That's called packing. The last question. Republicans have historically practiced gerrymandering more than Democrats. 1, 2, or 3.
So we definitely felt like 1 and 2 were true until... repeat number 3.
Number 3. The Republicans have historically practiced more gerrymandering than Democrats.
Yeah, so I thought 1 and 2 were true. And then you said number 3, and I'm like, I feel like Republicans have historically done it more. But then I'm like, we're not always innocent. So I think I'm still going to go with 3.
Three is your choice. All right.
And I'm going with two. It's definitely not number one.
Yeah.
I think number three, you're like trying to do some kind of reverse psychology game on. But like my common sense says, like, yes, Republicans have done this more. And
it's and that's so sad that we automatically are like, you know, because they always show us their hand.
Yeah. I feel like they wouldn't have some of the policies that they have on their platform if that weren't true. You know what I mean? I don't know. Two, we were talking about packing and like packing and cracking is splitting apart. Packing, my understanding of packing has always been like Clyburn's district's a perfect example. I'm going to take all the black voters in this general area and put them all in one district, even though it makes more sense for them, for Charleston to be with Charleston people and Columbia to be with Columbia people. But I'm going to take these black neighborhoods and I'm going to push them all together to try to consolidate their power. So I'm going to go with two.
Okay. So to recap, you said two is false. And then, Kirsten, which one did you pick?
Three.
You picked three. Okay. Mm-hmm. Drum roll, please.
I'm real anxious.
Kirsten is correct.
That's it. You know it.
I mean, dang, Kirsten. Share the love sometimes. My gosh, girl. Wow.
Like, oh, I knew what? you had a tell with number one in the fact that you couldn't pronounce Elbridge. And so I was like, yeah, that one's true because she didn't make that up.
I know.
Listen, and I'm going to be so honest. Like, when I have my guests fill in for me on maternity leave, if they get them right, I'm counting them towards wins.
Oh, yeah. Those are your people. Yeah.
Yeah.
Even if they're friends of ours, too, they're your people.
To fill in for me, I get their wins counted in my category. It might be the only wins I get.
Right.
No pressure to my guests.
It counts.
But correct.
Correct.
What if it's my co-host?
Kirsten, you already won enough. So anything, you just out. Okay. No more discussion about you. Okay. Because we got to share the love. Like this.
You're still going to be on the podcast when your guest is on the podcast.
Yeah.
So my guests are replacing me.
Yeah. Yeah. And listen, I knew the answer. And Kirsten went, I still feel like it's rigged. I'm like, did I say that right? Let me go back to make sure.
That's why I
like,
need you to say it again. But I also know, you know, that Democrats have a kind of a checkered past. Mm-hmm. And even now we're not innocent, fair. But like in recent
history. I didn't even think about the fact that like Democrats were Republicans and I didn't
think really that yes. was what I was thinking about was I was like.
And this is in the 1800s. So again, this is the 1800s, you know, when it was created and things like that. And I do want to throw it out there for, you know, people who get on me. Democrats and Republicans have been known to gerrymander. Let me go ahead and just say, rip the band-aid off and say both parties have equally had some type of gerrymandering practices, you know. Hopefully, things like that. But, and speaking of,
and listen, I'm never going to pick the same answer as either one of y'all. Like, I just feel like statistically, so when Kirsten goes first and she picks three and I'm between two and three, well, then I'm definitely picking two because if she is wrong, I'm going to be right.
Yeah.
And if she's right, I don't want to also, like, I don't want to share it. I just want to.
Yeah. That's how I feel.
I'm that person who always picks like the letter C, you know, so I'm always like, whatever, but I don't know my answer, but it's going to be C. I just feel it in my spirit. but we are now coming to a close. And like, just like Em said, we got some special guests and co-hosts around the corner. Can I wait? We are working it out.
We'll miss you though, Em.
Yes, we are going to miss you, Em, for real. I'm going to
save the really special guests for when I come back.
Because I feel like, is this going to be Em's last pod?
I'm hoping to get one more.
Okay.
And you said to save.
And then episode 10, y'all will start without me. Yeah. The two that you put in our group text today, don't schedule those for when I'm not here.
And then as soon as soon as all of our other guests watch this show, they're gonna realize who was the special guest and him said.
Listen, no shade to some of the other people, but like I asked people that were my friends to be my special guest. You went and asked people.
I was looking at y'all names, and again, no shade, but I was like, now, come on, y'all. And again,
I wanted to pick people who would make me proud in my seat.
Absolutely.
And not want to keep it when I came back.
Yeah. Yeah. And I cannot wait for my people. You know what I'm saying? No shade to y'all. Because again, they all going to watch this to be like, well, dang, what are we slim pickings over here?
We're like, they're going to back out.
Yeah. If that's how you feel.
Wait, I was honestly surprised one of my three wasn't already on somebody's list to have asked. Like, I was like, surely somebody asked this person because we've talked about him on this podcast before. Mm-hmm. And I was like, well, he's going to be one of my guests then.
No, I was cracking up about Kirsten. I'm so glad. Person. Yeah, Kirsten was like, well, you already have my one person. I would say who it is, but you know.
My one. She's like, this is the only person.
Yeah, yeah. That's all we need. Absolutely. Please. Yes. Have that person come on. But yes, if we have not hyped you up enough with this ending, I cannot wait. And I don't know. And we might have to keep rolling on this plan with or without you. You told us, so you got to wait.
Well, why don't you just have that first special guest that you put in our chat join us for the next episode, and then I know I definitely get time.
All right, but thank you guys for tuning in. You see how I cut her off because anybody got time for Emily and her thank you guys for tuning in. I cannot wait until you guys meet all of our special guests. I hope, and make sure you guys keep M in your prayers. Make sure you manifest all kind of good positivity out for her and this bundle of joy that is going to be our future voter and our future guest on our podcast.
Future friend.
Our special guest host, you know?
That's right.
But yes, until next time, keep it politically speaking. See you next time, guys.
This is Kirsten Pruitt. Please subscribe to the show wherever you find podcasts and consider leaving us a rating. You can find links to our social media and YouTube page in the show notes. Thanks again for listening.
The preceding podcast is solely owned by its host or hosts and is distributed by Big Media LLC. Copyright 2025, all rights reserved.